I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The three-time South Carolina Broadcasters Association Sports Talk Radio Show of the Year. The Rob Brown Show is back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Happy Monday, dudes and dudettes. Great to be with you. I am Rob Brown, the great one. Lonzo on the ones and twos. Somebody on the text challenged us, Lonzo, to do the headstand touchdown celebration that swept America this weekend.
Yeah, we've both been wearing headphones for a really long time, so the top of our heads are flat. But no.
There's a part of me that wants to try it, and there's a part of me that knows that if I try it, the only way it's successful is if I'm on one of those like super thick like gym cheerleader tumbling mats. Because if I try that on this ground, I'm breaking something. All right, I respect the kid from Incarnate Word who started a phenomenon this weekend with the headstand and touchdown
also
celebration.
Got flagged right away, didn't he? Wasn't that him that got flagged right away?
I don't even know, because I'm going to tell you.
I'm pretty sure he did, because it's in college. You can't do that in college.
See, here's my question. Why?
Because it's the rule. And if you want the rule change, have them change the rule. But until they do, it's the rule.
Stupid-ass rule. Hate it. Stum rule.
Still Stum the rule. Rule.
What's the rule? Don't stay. Unless the rule says don't stand on your head. And even if it does, that's a dumb rule.
Well, it's taunting.
I mean, he's literally doing the opposite. Like,
how is that?
Because he makes himself look like a goober in the best possible way.
No, have you seen him? No, that's
incredible.
That's precision. I mean, he is. He'd get a 10 out of 10 for form.
Oh, it was. I mean, it was perfect execution. Perfect execution. All right, 7:02 in the morning. You got less than 58 minutes until you got to get into the office, sit down, respond to those emails that you ignored because holy crap, what a football weekend we had this weekend. Once you knock those out, though, you get your first break of the day. And what you should do is you should get up away from that desk. You should walk down the hallway down to the break room, grab one of them little styrofoam cups, fill it up with water as your excuse not to go back to the desk. Can't have liquids around the equipment, boss. It's very expensive. And you should stand there and you should have a conversation with Susan, because Susan loves sports. She loves football. Susan's a Gamecock fan. She's real excited to talk football today. Real excited to talk football today. But if you're going to talk to Susan about sports, you need to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you need to know what's going on in the world of sports, well, ladies and gentlemen, you've come to the right place, because right now we do this. It's the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports with your coworkers this lovely upstate Monday morning. When you do, this is what you'll be talking about. Let's dive in with item numero uno. Major League Baseball has come to its conclusion. The Los Angeles Dodgers are your 2024 World Series champions. They defeat the New York Yankees 4-1. Now, that's not the water cooler cheat sheet item. Obviously, that happened almost a week ago already. Time flies all the time. What is on the water cooler cheat sheet is the fact that it is now Major League Baseball awards season, and the first of the prestigious awards were handed out yesterday. The gold gloves were given away yesterday. San Francisco Giant third baseman Matt Chapman won his 5th gold glove. Kansas City Royals shortstop Bobby Witt Jr. amongst the 14 first-time winners of baseball's most famous fielding honor. Your winners, Cleveland second baseman Andrés Giménez and left fielder Stephen Kwan, both won for the third consecutive year, along with Arizona first baseman Christian Walker and Cubs left fielder Ian Happ. Rockies center fielder Brenton Doyle won for the 2nd straight season. St. Louis slugger Nolan Arenado is a 10-time Golden Glove winner. Colorado's Ryan McMahon, both finalists neither brought home a medal, which should tell you just how impressive the medal winners were this year. Six teams had two gold glove winners each, with the Guardians, Rockies, Royals, Brewers, Giants, and Mariners all notching at least two of them. AL first-time winners, along with Bobby Witt Jr., Royals pitcher Seth Lugo, Mariners catcher Cal Raleigh, Minnesota first baseman Carlos Santana, Houston third baseman Alex Bregman, Toronto center fielder Dalton Varsho, Boston right fielder Willier Abreu, and Mariners utility man Dylan Moore. Over in the NL, first-time winners included Giants catcher Patrick Bailey, Milwaukee second baseman Bryce Terang, right fielder Sal Frelick, Colorado shortstop Ezekiel Tower, and Pittsburgh utility man Jared Triolo, as well as Atlanta Braves pitcher Chris Sale. Your Golden Glove winners for the 2024 season. Let's move on to item number two. I don't mean to alarm anybody, but hockey season is here, ladies and gentlemen. Alarm. I don't want to alarm you guys, eh? The Carolina Hurricanes are good at hockey. 4-2 winners over the Washington Capitals last night. That Washington Capitals team was second place in the Metropolitan Division. I say was second place in the Metropolitan Division because now that belongs to the 8-2 Carolina Hurricanes. After the win last night, a two-goal night last night for Dmitry Orlov. You also had another goal for Martin Natchez, who popped one, and Andrei Svechnikov, who popped one as well. The Carolina Hurricanes, 8-2-0. They are 3-1 at the crib. And what does that do? It moves them into sole possession of second place in the Metropolitan Division. They are tied in the points standings now over the Washington Capitals, but they have the heads-up tiebreaker in the Metro Division, meaning Carolina stands second right now. They have also done so with one fewer game played than the Caps, but they are on a six-game winning streak at this point. The Carolina Hurricanes ain't no joke. Ladies and gentlemen, the news here that goes on the cheat sheet is not that the Hurricanes won. It's that the Hurricanes have won now six times in a row, and the Hurricanes are now in second possession of that division. By the way, the only team with more points than them right now in that division are the league-leading favorites to win the Stanley Cup, the New York Rangers, who have one more point. Your NHL divisional leaders right now in the Atlantic, the Florida Panthers, have 19 points, sitting on a 9-3 record. They are the only team in the Eastern and the Atlantic division that has more points than the Carolina Hurricanes, with the exception of the aforementioned Rangers, who have 17. 22 points for the Jets, by the way. The Jets are 11-1, which is like irresponsible. 18 points for the Minnesota Wild. They have more than Carolina. No one else in the Central does. The Vegas Golden Knights have 17 points. No one else in the Pacific Division has more points than the Canes. This team is a good hockey team, man. Real good hockey team. If you are not watching Carolina Hurricane hockey, you're missing out on good hockey, like good hockey. All right, let's get to item number three. Your Palmetto State football wrap-up is almost exclusively item number three on Mondays during the football season. Let us dive right in. And we start with the one team that does not want to be in this position. That is the Clemson Tigers. 33-21. The Louisville Cardinal do everything they want and a little bit more on the road in Clemson, South Carolina. Tyler Shough was the threat, I thought, in this game. Turns out he wasn't. Turns out it was Isaac Brown, who racked up 151 yards and a tutty on 20 carries. This man averaged 7.6 yards per carry. Rushed for a total of 210 yards on the road at Clemson. You got beat at the point of attack. This is old school football out of the Louisville Cardinal. we are going to beat you at the line of scrimmage. And if you can't stop us, we'll run all damn day. And that is exactly what Louisville did in this game. We're going to talk more about this as the show progresses, because I said it back in the first hour. I will say it now. I think this is a program-defining outcome for Clemson. I feel like for the last year and a half, 2 years, maybe three, the Clemson Tigers have been standing precariously on a razor's edge between relevancy and irrelevancy. And I got to tell you, I think Louisville just knocked you flat over into the land of irrelevancy. I think it is a downward trajectory. I'm not going to be so bold as to say that this is the beginning of the end of the Dabo Swinney era. I'm not, because I think Dabo has lifetime at Clemson if he wants it. I am going to say this weekend was the first time that it seemed consensus amongst Clemson fans that there's a problem, that something's wrong, and that it needs to be course corrected immediately. Clemson fans, where are you? 844-326-3663 is the Renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone. The Ingles Market Studio text line is 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-N to 71307. We'll read those texts on the air. I think it is telling that the Carolina fans have blowed up the text line so far, and I have heard crickets from Clemson fans this morning. Gamecocks all up on the text line. Clemson fans, nada. We're going to talk more about this result coming up a little bit later in the show. We stick with college football. Why? Because Shane Beamer this weekend said, hey, yo, 44-20, the Gamecocks knock off number 10, Texas A&M at Willie. It just beat Texas A&M. They beat Texas A&M. There's multiple ways you can win a game. The other team can beat themselves, you can slip by, or you can beat them. South Carolina beat them. They sent the Colt back to the compound. Real, real sad. Mike Elko's team loses its first game in conference. They're now 5-1, and the one is Shane Beamer and his Gamecocks. Lenoris Sellers, 244 yards and a pair of tutties through the air, ran for 106 and a touchdown. Listen, I'm not going to say that I'm looking for South Carolina fans to apologize to Lenora Sellers, because y'all kind of were up on my dog the last few weeks, and I'm going to keep it a buck, no cap. So was I. Because I think the kid was making some damn freshman mistakes. And I think some freshman mistakes in the LSU game, I think some freshman mistakes in the Alabama game, combined with the Jordan rules in place for the crown jewels of the SEC, cost you a couple of wins. This Gamecock team is, Lonzo, 2-4 good snaps, legitimately, away from being 7-1 right now.
Absolutely.
2-3 good snaps away from being 7-1 right now. It looks to me, courtesy of what Clemson did this weekend, it looks to me like every game is winnable for the South Carolina Gamecocks the rest of the ride. In fact, I'm going to say this, and this is going to tick some people off, and I don't care. Lonzo, the toughest game left on the schedule right now is Hoomst, because I'm arguing it's the Vanderbilt Commodores.
Yeah. I mean, wow, so weird to say, isn't it? I mean, right now, with the way the Gamecocks played Saturday and the way Vandy has been playing, Vandy definitely better than Clemson right now.
Diego Pavia is a dog, and as he famously said, Vanderbilt is turnt. The doors on the road are the toughest game left right now. Clemson may find another gear. This may be the boost of motivation that they needed to go back and defend the house. We'll find out. But right now, today, Vanderbilt is the toughest remaining game for the Gamecocks, and that's a winnable game. Okay? It's a winnable game. I think South Carolina's better than Auburn right now. and Vandy went to their house and beat them. Now you got to go to the Doors house, and it's going to be the loudest that I don't even know what the name of Vanderbilt Stadium is. Commodore Stadium? Is there some like old sir? Is there some old general they're named their stadium after?
I do believe it has a name, but yeah, I don't know. What
respect
it is.
To Vandy, because I love Diego Pavia. That's my dog. First Bank Stadium. Now you all know. I didn't know. Did any of you know? I don't think any of you knew. First Bank Stadium, formerly Dudley Field at Vanderbilt Stadium. Now it's First Bank Stadium.
Dudley Field.
I like Dudley Field. Diego! Get the table! This game's going to be fun. South Carolina gets a dub over Texas A&M. We're going to talk about that game coming up as well. And to wrap it up, Carolina Panthers get that dub. 23-22, they knock off not for the time being. New Orleans Saints yesterday, Chuba Hubbard, one of his two tutties on the day, comes with just a tick over 3 minutes left to play, and that was all that the Panthers needed. They kept the Saints, for the most part, irrelevant in the red zone. Derek Carr had one touchdown pass. Taysom Hill had one touchdown run. Saints ran for 197 yards, .155 off the feet of Alvin Kamara. But here's the thing. Carolina's defense did exactly what a defense that is that banged up, that hurt, needs to do. Once you get inside the 20, you ain't going nowhere. They stuffed everything New Orleans did. First two drives for New Orleans both ended in the red zone with field goals. It kept them out of the end zone. Saints walked away from two opening red zone drives with 6 points. What'd Carolina do? Get the ball back in the second quarter. Go put up 10, take the lead. Good football. Good football as that roster is capable of playing. That team is booty. New Orleans is booty. They're garbage. I got to tell you right now, when I left and I walked with my boy J-Rye back to his rig, the lot that he was parked in, great one, I had to walk past the player tunnel where the Saints were coming out to get on their bus. Look, I took a picture of the Saints ride home.
That's funny.
It's all the dumpsters being dragged to the Saints locker room. And I was really hoping Dennis Allen was going to be in one of those dumpster carts when he left. My team sucks. It sucks. At least with Carolina, there's hope. There's optimism. There's a plan. You can see what's developing game by game. You can see what I believe, maybe not as steep as you'd like, but an upward trajectory. My team sucks, and we're $80 million over the cap. So, that's fun. Congrats to the Panthers. They win 23-22. Has been confirmed. The legendary Rashad Beard will join us at 9 a.m., So I can, for the record, Lonzo, this is precisely why I didn't talk last Thursday. This is why I did not talk an ounce of bull last week. This is why.
Doesn't need to be any logic and fandom. It's fanaticism. You should have went crazy. You should have talked your stuff, even though you lost. Disappointed.
I don't care. Be disappointed. You're not more disappointed than I am in my whole football organization.
No, I had a good sports weekend, so no, I'm not disappointed at all.
Hey, James Franklin is a goober. We should talk about that. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Program defining. There are a lot of games that are labeled program defining. About a quarter of them actually are. Because in order for something to be program defining, it not only has to be a result that genuinely stands out, but it also is something that must be carried forward, positive or negative. If your team goes out and has a bad loss. Maybe a shocking loss. Maybe you're upset on the road by a team that has been the laughingstock of the conference for 100 years. Since the Pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock. That isn't necessarily program defining. The definition is set by what happens after that. Just because your team welcomes in a top 10 program that is considered a playoff favorite, just because they come to your house and you beat them in what is arguably the largest victory of your head coach's entire tenure, and I say arguably because they did a couple of years ago go down to Memorial and knock off Clemson in their house. I still think the A&M win is the biggest win of Shane Beamer's tenure.
Yeah, you can't count the Clemson win because of the rivalry. I mean, so it's going to happen every once in a while. The A&M win definitely for Shane Beamer, the biggest win.
I think it is. And I'll tell you, it's not just for the result, right? Because it's one thing to have a good night game at Willie B and then come to the house, the Missouri Tigers, and to have a electric environment at Willie B against the Missouri Tigers and to go out there and beat the Missouri Tigers. Okay, good. Good. It's a good win. It's a good win. To have a top 10 team come to your house. To have the stadium on display the way it was. And I will tell you this. I watched at the house. The wife and I got off the show on Saturday. I got off Bet for the Cycle at 4. And we were yay close to driving over. Till I looked up tickets. They were not cheap. They were not cheap at all. They were like, we can't justify buying last minute tickets to this game. So we didn't. We stayed outside. I finished up our new outdoor fire pit on Saturday after the game. Decided, you know what? I'm going to finish the fire pit. We'll watch this game outside. So finished the fire pit. Sat out back. Brought the TV out. Watched it outside. And I don't know, Zoe, if it was the same for you. But the feed that I was watching on YouTube TV didn't have commercials. None. I did not watch commercials in that game, which I got to tell you, oh, was that fun. So, no commercials. Now, I'm not saying that to brag about the fact that there were no commercials. I'm saying that to tell you that I'm assuming for a large swath of college football fans, and would you argue that Texas A&M at South Carolina was the biggest game happening Saturday night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure, because it was a ranked team. And South Carolina has been they've been improved,
yep,
and nearly beat a couple really big teams. So for sure,
yeah.
I'm trying to think of what Clemson was on at the same time.
Clemson was on at the same time.
I'm trying
Clemson
to think
Louisville.
Of any other game that was on.
Clemson and Louisville was not supposed to be. Now I won't say it was the biggest result, although you can argue that it was. I will say that on Saturday at 8:30 p.m., it was the biggest thing happening in college football. And so around the country, and this isn't something that was controlled, but it is something that must be taken advantage of. Around the country on Saturday night, and if any of you had this experience, please let me know because I'm genuinely curious. Genuinely curious. How many of you, if you were watching on YouTube TV, did not have commercials in your feed? I did not. Which meant that, Lonzo, every time that there was a timeout or a score or any stoppage of play, the feed went to a bird's eye cam up on top of the lights looking down at the field, and it showed the entirety of the inside of Willie B.
Oh, that sounds really cool.
Dude, so you know what we
especially
saw?
Especially with the lights and everything. And you sitting outside?
Yep.
You got a light show out there. Way to go.
We turned off we got cafe lights that hang around the patio. I got a boys, the Casa de Love upgraded the De Love this weekend, all right? I hung some cafe lights around the fire pit. It's got a nice little gravel bed down.
All right, what's a cafe light?
The lights that, like, hang on strings that hang down. Yeah, cafe lights.
Okay.
So I hung cafe lights around it. I got the fire pit, gravel bottom, nice dug down fire pit, so the fire's like right at you know, knee high level. Got some nice chairs to sit outside with the Casa de Love, emphasis on the day love now. The wife and I sitting outside. I went and unplugged the cafe lights because the TV with the Willie B lights going in the dark over the fire, mwah, chef's kiss, man. And it was uninterrupted. So South Carolina would score. And those lights would go off at Willie B, and all of a sudden my backyard is just black and garnet flickering, dude. It was great. Now, why is that big? Because the eyes of the country were on Willie B Saturday night. You had the night game, you had the big game. The eyes of the country were on Willie B on Saturday night. And what did South Carolina do? They owned that night. And so, if you're a kid that's sitting at the hizzle, if you're a kid that's sitting at the house and you're flipping channels and you're a potential 5-star, 4-star, whatever, and you're trying to figure out where to go, y'all, South Carolina put on a gosh darned show on Saturday night. Not just in that they won, but how they won. Not just in the way that they were scoring tutties in the second half, but the whole environment. And then after the game is over, here come the fans. Cost you $250,000. I would say money well spent, because they showed the aerial shot of the field. And man, it was incredible. There was another video that came out after the game was over. It's why college football, I've said it before, the NFL has better football. College has a better game day experience. There were fans that ran out onto the field, Lonzo, and they were taking their white rally towels, and they went out to midfield, and they were rubbing them on the midfield logo so that the paint from the field turned the white towels garnet and black. The eyes of the country were on you, and you answered the bell. Because, see, that's a game that if Texas A&M comes in and they win, even if it's a closely contested game, if they win, there's a lot of people that go, all right, it's a good environment, but, like, can't win football games, right? Everything was set up for you to win that game. You couldn't do it. They didn't just win. They dominated the game. I know for a fact that you had one of the biggest recruiting classes maybe in Shane's entire tenure that was in the building Saturday night. So not only did they experience what I think is now, and again, I've been to, I counted a couple of months ago on the show, I think I've been to 25 Division I college football stadiums in my lifetime. I'm going to tell you right now, if you, the list of Saturday night experiences better than Willie B, to me, is Death Valley Baton Rouge, Tennessee's Neyland Stadium, and I think that might be it, all right? That might be the whole list. So they got to experience that, and they got to see a football team that went out there, dominated the line of scrimmage, owned every aspect of the game, with all that electricity behind it. I'm going to tell you, if South Carolina can go on the road to Vanderbilt, to Nashville, Tennessee this weekend, and get a win against the hottest Vanderbilt team in the history of Commodore football, then we can say this. I'm saying it now. That was a program-defining W for the Gamecocks. But if you go on the road and you bring that same consistency, mentality, discipline, attitude, and you go get a result against Vandy, now we can say this team's full of dogs. And more importantly, this team's full of guys that have learned lessons and are carrying them forward this year. And that's a dangerous football team. Now, we've talked about program defining on the way up. Let's talk about program defining on the way down. Clemson, Louisville, when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. I have made it very clear over the years that I despise influencer culture. And I despise influencer culture because I think influencers are paid to make smart people do dumb things in the name of social media participation. However, what I cannot argue against is that influencer culture works. That's why advertisements are a thing, because we need you to hear that thing. We need you to believe that thing is good, and we need you to participate in that thing. By the way, please go visit our wonderful sponsors here on the Fan Upstate and tell them how much you love us, okay? Influencers can be a problem. Not for them. For the thing that they are influencing, because influencers can be negative too. And there are no bigger influencers in college football than the people who have the microphones, specifically during games. I would like to play for you a very quick clip. This clip is from the Clemson game. Clemson trails 26-7 with 6 minutes left in the game. Finally, Clemson finds a little bit of offense. Phil Maffa goes into the end zone. This, of course, brings the score to 26-13. Now, I'm bad at math. As I've told you many times, this is why all of my jobs are words jobs. Because I'm bad with addition and subtraction and division and multiplication and all the other math things. But I do know, and I can do this off the top of my head. Lonzo, that 26 minus 13 is 13. And in order to get 13 points in football, one must score two touchdowns. I know that 26-14 is a 12-point game. I am also aware that in a 12-point game, you must score two touchdowns. However, if you were to add 2 points to 13 points, that would make it 26-15. That would make it 11 points. And I know that 8 plus 3 is 11, which means that if you make it an 8-point game, you must score a touchdown and only need a field goal to tie the game. And that is why when Clemson scored to make it 26-13 with 6 to play in the game, and they decided to kick the extra point, the young men with microphones that evening on ABC were, shall we say, perplexed. It's not a great vibe when the supposed to be, not always, but supposed to be neutral play-by-play and color man, supposed to be, spend time a minute and 34 seconds, if you want to be specific, just absolutely dogging your coach for what is, I'm sorry, respectfully, an objectively wrong decision. Not like there's gray area and he could come out and say, well, you know, we thought that if we did this, we could chess move, set up this, and it would lead to this. That is the wrong decision objectively. There is no argument. That was dumb. And here's the thing, great one. He did it again. Louisville scored. Clemson scored. They have another opportunity to make it an 11-point game. And again, Dabo elects to kick the extra point, making it a two-touchdown game instead of a two-score game.
It makes sense if you don't think you can win.
How does it?
If you don't think you can win, then you're getting your kicker some extra work.
I mean, I'm going to go ahead right now and say, while I respect, and this is a first, ladies and gentlemen, Lonzo coming to the defense of Dabo Swinney.
Nah, I've done it before.
Either way, Lonzo coming to the defense of a Clemson football decision.
How am I defending him? I'm saying he already knew they were going to lose. I mean, that's a loser mentality. I don't know that I'm defending. I'm just giving you ask what reason would you do it, and in my opinion, that's the only reason you do it is because you know you're going to lose.
I will say this. If I ever, and let me emphasize this, had a football coach who with 6 minutes left could make it a game or a touchdown and a field goal, tie the game and send it to overtime, and they waved the white flag, I want that coach fired before he gets in the locker room. There is no post-game speech. There is no goodbye. There is no farewell. You want to say goodbye and farewell? Take out a full-page ad in the newspaper on Monday because you don't coach here anymore. I refuse to accept that Dabo was waving the white flag. And I know that he didn't because Clemson got the ball back and they ran the damn ball and they went down and they scored another touchdown. So I don't think the white flag was being waved.
Does the offensive coordinator have any say or anything? Or the assistant coaches have any say on what they go for one or two there? Maybe someone lost that analytics sheet. And they couldn't get, and they were having computer problems. They couldn't get it back up where it says, according to analytics, we've got to do this here. And then they didn't know what to do. Is that a possibility?
I don't know.
A lot of people stomping around the stadium. Maybe someone pulled a plug on a cord. I don't know.
What I do know in this spot is that is objectively the wrong decision. Objectively, there is zero. No, I do not waste your breath because I won't hear a word. It'll go in this ear, rattle around in there like a pinball, and come out the other. And the only thing that I will take away from this, if you say, well, actually, Rob, Debo made the right call, the only thing my brain will hear is end of discussion. There is no argument. You go for two, you're making an 11-point game. Because here's the thing. What's the difference between being down 13 if you don't convert it and 12 if you get the extra point? Not a damn thing.
I don't know how this works as far as, is there someone in his ear going, no, we need to go to two.
I don't care. At that point, be Dabo Sweeney and go, hey, Garrett or whoever else, you were going for two. We're making this a tutty and a field goal game, not a tutty and a tutty game. Can't be a tutty and a tutty game because tutties ain't been easy for us to acquire this evening. So we're going to make it a tutty and an FG game. This is not, again, this, you don't hear me say this very often. This is not up for debate. This is not a discussion. Dabo Sweeney was wrong. In this moment, he was objectively, certifiably wrong. And if you're telling me that in that game, at that moment, with that much on the line, and I'm not just talking about the pride of the program, the image of the program, all of which took an enormous sledgehammer this weekend. But with the inside track to an ACC conference championship game appearance, and therefore a battle with probably Miami for an ACC title, which then also earns you a first-round bye in the playoffs. With all that on the line, you're telling me that you looked at the scoreboard and it didn't immediately pop into your brain, we need to go for two, to the point that you pull that little microphone on the headset down and you go,
everyone shut up, we're going for two. Shut up, now.
That is a failure with a capital F.
All right, you're giving him the credit. What I'm saying is assistant coaches going, Dabo, what are you doing? We need to go for two.
No.
And him going, no, we're going for one.
Objectively wrong decision. However, whatever.
No, you're right. And you said give you a reason. Hey, I'm glad they went for one. I'm glad they lost. Because, first of all, I picked SMU versus Miami in the ACC championship, and now it's looking a little more favorable. But the other thing is, you're harping on this, and you need to, because it was a bad move. They weren't going to beat Louisville anyway. They just weren't. Louisville was the better team that night, and Clemson didn't come to play.
However you want to slice it and dice it, there's one of two things. The team quit. They quit. I'll tell you right now. And you want to know where my frustration with the New Orleans Saints is coming from right now? Because they asses quit. Because they quit in that game. They quit in that game. So either the team quit on Dabo or Dabo quit. Either way, I don't want a quitter representing my program. Do you? Of course not. But I don't think that's the case. I don't think the team quit. I don't think they rolled over and just accepted an L with 6 minutes left to play and needing a field goal as one of the two scores. A field goal. Yeah, maybe if you need two tutties in 6 minutes and Louisville's been able to run the ball on you, and they had. Maybe if you need two touchdowns and Louisville's running the ball, maybe in that moment you go, not great. This isn't great. All right. And psychologically, subconsciously, maybe you don't have 100% effort. But if you need a field goal and a touchdown, that feels very attainable. That feels very attainable. Now we're going to go. Full afterburner. Let's go win this game. So either you quit, or you got a coach who can't count. That's the only two options. You either have a team that quit, or you got a coach that can't do numbers. And I'm not talking about long division. I'm not talking rocket science. I'm talking the difference between 11, 12, and 13. That's it. That's it. And the difference between 11 and 12 and the reality that has on a football, the fact that he didn't say, and not once, because I'm going to tell you straight up, I make mistakes like 3 to 7 times a year. It's one thing to make a mistake once and go, oh, how didn't I see that? Right? That's why pencils have erasers. I can see making that mistake once, and then somebody gets in the air and goes,
Coach, we should have gone for 2. We'd have been down 11. We only needed a field goal.
And going, oh, okay, well, dang it. I screwed up. That's my bad. That's my bad. It is another thing to make that mistake, have the entirety of college football going, what? And then turn around and do it again. You did it again. Twice in this game, you could have knocked it from a 2-tutty game down to a tutty and a field goal game. And twice, you sent out the field goal. Twice. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? I don't know what to tell you. And look, there's already a Clemson fan up in here going, ding dong, maybe less cringeworthy without the shame. Listen, I know you're mad at Dabo. I know you're mad at your team. Don't take it out on me. I'm not the one who can't count from 11 to 12. I'm not the one who's making decisions that my 7-year-old nephew playing Madden knows better. I get that you don't want to criticize Dabo. That has been true, and I understand it. I respect it. The man's won you some natties. I understand it. He made Clemson. I get it. No one wants to look at your cool uncle or your grandpa and go, oh, he's kind of a butt. Nobody wants to do that. You love your relatives. But don't come in here and take this out on me. I'm just pointing out what literally that play-by-play man spent a minute and a half rambling on about. Don't get mad at me because I got sunglasses on. Be mad at Dabs because he doesn't know the difference between 11 and 12 in a football game. Don't be mad at Lonzo either because he's about to seduce you with this sports flush.
I've been mad at you every day since you started wearing the sunglasses. The Carolina Panthers picked up win number 2 on the season, a divisional matchup with the New Orleans Saints yesterday. 23-22, Chuba Hubbard scored the game-winning touchdown with just minutes left to play, and the defense killed the Saints' drive late to finish the contest. Bryce Young finished the game 16-26 for 171 yards, 1 touchdown and 1 interception. Carolina travels to Germany to face the Giants Sunday morning. Carolina Hurricanes picked up win number 8 yesterday, 4-2 over the Washington Capitals. The Canes moved to 8-2-0 and moved past Washington for second place in the Metropolitan Division with 16 points in 10 games, just 1 point behind the division leading Rangers. Tune in tonight at 6:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Columbia International Rams in hardcourt action. Is Furman versus CIU right here on your home for Paladins basketball, The Fan, Upstate.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.